I hardly ever record at night. This is true. I don't know if you can tell, but it is night here. It is Tuesday night. You're listening to this on Wednesday morning. I just got back from Indianapolis just a half hour ago, and I don't want to miss a beat here on the Revelation series, so I'm coming to you practically live. At least I'm live, barely live. I'm a bit of a mess, but here we go. What a meeting in Indianapolis. I would like to thank my host, Andy May. He put on one heck of a meeting. I've met before in an airport. I've had meetings in a pole barn. I've had meetings at conference rooms, other strange places. Where else? A dentist's office, yeah. Actually, a psychiatrist's office, and now in a dance studio. We had a meeting at a dance studio in Avon, Indiana, adjoining Indianapolis, and Andy May was the host that made everything happen. Yeah, it's true. I showed up, and 17 other people showed up. So we had 17 people at the meeting. Young people, some people were new to this. They came because Andy forced them to, and they were enlightened. They came up to me afterwards, shook my hand, so thrilled to hear the truth. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, thanks to you, I gave away books. And people went home with the truth. The photo that you see accompanying this show is Hannah May, who is Andy's daughter. And we witnessed the miracle of birth. Well, not literally. We didn't literally witness it. We weren't there. Andy was there. But Hannah gave birth to a son that night. The day of the conference, she gave birth the next day. Went into labor that night, and the next day, a baby was born. And so I am there posing with Hannah. Hannah is a great evangelist. I mean, she loves the truth, and she was very enthusiastic about me coming to Indianapolis, as well as the father of the child, Austin. The child's name is Ezra, beautiful little boy. I'll put a picture of, I'm not the father. I'm just posing there next to the chair with Hannah and the little baby. Austin is the daddy, and he also loves a scripture, and these two had many, many questions. Here, they were ready to embark upon the adventure of their lives, to have this beautiful baby boy, and they were so interested in the scriptures. I mean, just the day before, they were talking to me about God and the plan of the eons and the purpose of God in reconciling the creation to himself. Lots of young people. I have to mention Logan as well, who works with Andy. I had a dinner with him. I bought dinner for this young man, also very interested in the truth. And the reason I'm up against the wall here broadcasting the day before at night here, who knows what's going to come forth here as I'm exhausted, but I spent an extra day because I talked to the cousins of Dean Wilkinson. Everybody, when I go to these conferences, people say, Martin, we want you to relax. We want you to have a nice time. You're on vacation. And I always say, let me tell you right now, I am not on vacation. I'm not here to relax. I'm not here to sleep. I'm not here to party or have a good time. Even though I do have a good time, but I'm always there to work, and I'm there to talk to as many people as I can, not just at the meeting. And I tell you this because you help me to do this. And it's not just at the meeting, although I do that. I probably talked for an hour and people were just sucking it up. It was great there at the dance studio. And it's not just at that time, but it's in between the cracks. It's talking, it's trying to get together with people who I know want to talk more. And I hear it through the grapevine, so-and-so would really like to talk to you, Martin. So I always make time for as many people as I can. So Dean Wilkinson, the mastermind of the Evansville, Indiana meetings last month, has two cousins, twins, up in Carmel, Indiana. So he said, I know it's probably out of your way. I said, forget out of my way. That's what I do. I go out of my way. I love to go out of my way. So I drove up, talked to these guys at their office. Fortunately, they had a slow day for 3 hours. Gave away more books. By that time, it was night. I was in the middle of rush hour. I meant to go home, but it was too late. I went to a Walmart, my favorite place, until the rush hour dissipated. And then by that time, it was 8 o'clock. I'm like, 1 o'clock, I'm going to get home. No. So I found a Super 8 motel, $59. and I got a suite. It was unbelievable. I think the lady had mercy on me. I don't know. I must have looked like a bedraggled mutt. And so she said, I'll give you this suite. It was like, I'm going to give this to you, kid. I said, okay, I'll take it. So that was really the first time I actually relaxed. So thanks to all who made the meeting in Indianapolis possible, the last one of this year. I tell this to you to encourage you that there are others who are of like mind. These are your people. They are your brothers and sisters in Christ. And now you have a new member of the family, little Ezra. And what a cute kid. Perfect complexion. Very handsome young man. Googled and gurgled. Nice head of hair, too. And he was at the meeting, right? In utero. He attended a Martin Zender assembly in utero. And I think I could just tell he was absorbing it. And when he saw me after he emerged from the womb several hours later, I visited, I got a knowing look from him. And so that was very satisfying. Now, the two aspects of the unveiling, the manward and the Godward. This is not an unusual thing in the scriptures. The manward and the Godward aspects are always distinguished. And again, I gave you the example of Genesis. The manward aspect, as God begins to walk with Adam and calls himself Elohim, I'm sorry, calls himself Yahweh. The first time, you know, I told you that the title Yahweh changes, the God who is, was, and will be, the will be is left out in the unveiling because he's present. He has already come, so let we cut off the suffix. He first called himself Yahweh Elohim in the Garden of Eden. Yahweh is his time name. Will, being, and was. Starts with the future, I guess. Will, being, and was. Unless you're in Revelation 1:8, and then it's was, being, will be. It switches around. It's versatile. And the funny thing is, the Jews can't pronounce it. It's the secret name. You can't say it because it's so sacred and untouchable. And yet God feels free to treat it like a color form. You ever have those little games? Did you ever have those color forms? You know what I'm talking about? Those stickers that you put on the sticky board when you were a kid and you could build stories and build pictures and the parts were flexible? You want a better example? Mr. Potato Head. Okay, you can put different eyes, a different nose, and a different mouth on Mr. Potato Head. Different ears as well. It was flexible. Likewise, the name of Yahweh. That's right, I am comparing the Tetragrammaton Yahweh to Mr. Potato Head in that it can be adjusted and God adjusts it. But this is God's time name as he works with Adam in the garden through time and it becomes his Godward aspect. Before that, he was Elohim. He was the placer, the subjector, and that was the Godward view. And we have the manward view as far as people struggling in the unveiling, struggling through this stuff, these trials, God's indignation. And we have the Godward view, and we have the political and the religious. Chronicles, for instance, people read Chronicles and they scratch their little heads and they say, Chronicles is just a mere repetition of Kings because we're looking at the same events. The same events are being covered. Ah, my friends. Do not be so hasty, because Chronicles is not a mere repetition of Kings, although it does, it's much like it. It does go through the same time period, but one is from the political aspect, the Kings, one is from the priestly aspect, Chronicles, looking at the same events through a different lens, also in Genesis. As I said, starting in chapter 2, we see the creation of Adam repeated. People think, oh, there must be a new humanity being formed. There's a different Adam. No, it's just the same thing repeated. And I remind you, this is important as we launch further into the temple section. It's the same here in the unveiling. We're looking at now the same events, the temple section. I got a lot to say about it too. So it's going to help all through this section from now till somewhere around chapter 19 or 20 to know that we are in the religious section of the book. That helps to interpret it. When we get to something that we're not sure about, how does this apply? Who is this talking about? Then it helps to know that we're talking about a religious aspect. And the first sign we're going to get here is the sign of Israel under the figure of a woman. Israel is figured twice by a woman, because later we find the apostate nation under the same metaphor of the woman, only it's an unfaithful woman, because we're looking at Israel in apostasy. So this relates to their relation to Jehovah, has to do with worship. God's very concerned with Israel's worship. Now we're going to start seeing that, because their number one offense in their history, of course, is idolatry. What is idolatry? It's false worship. We have a faithful woman and an unfaithful woman, both considering Israel in a covenant relationship to Yahweh or Jehovah. That is his time name. Notice I used the word relationship. Relationship. That was what Adam began to enjoy in Genesis chapter 2, 24, whatever it is. Before that, it was God as his creator. So the next sign is the dragon. I'm just giving you still an overview of what's coming in the temple section. Now, the dragon is not an earthly potentate, but it is Satan himself. And there's a counterpart on earth, and it's a political organization. The wild beast comes forth from the dragon's call. The wild beast, a political organization. And it insists on worship as well as fealty. That's the big deal here. It insists on worship. We did not see that aspect in the first few chapters up to this point, but we're gonna see it now. Then we have, of course, the false prophet. The false prophet is doing what? Signs. Signs. Because why? This false prophet calls for worship. And so does this image, the great image that is presented with its miraculous powers. What does this remind you of? It goes back to Nebuchadnezzar's image. He wanted everybody to bow down when they heard the flute and the lyre and all sorts of wonderful music, the psaltery, whatever, and then you had to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's image. Oh, why, you know, you would think they would play like more bass-oriented music, like when you hear the sound of the Moog synthesizer, or when you hear a heavy bass line. Then we want you to bow down and work. But no, it was the flute and the lyre. But I can't understand that. It doesn't make sense to me. Had I been in that position, I would definitely have insisted that my worship be accompanied by heavy bass, at least a bass guitar, if not the Moog synthesizer. That's okay. Do I got time to get 2 Thessalonians in here? I want to get into along the line of these false miracles, I want to give you, I don't have time. All right, I'm going to start tomorrow's show. I don't take the holidays off. I work through the holidays every holiday. I'm not too, you know, crazy about the holidays, but I do like, I'll tell you what, I got to admit, I was driving home from Indianapolis, and I did some of these stations now, they go from their rock and roll format and they play Christmas music. And I'm usually kind of, Christmas brings back bittersweet memories for me. My parents are both dead, always had wonderful Christmas times. And so I usually turn the Christmas music off. But for some reason, I was feeling nostalgic and I put on the Christmas music, and it soothed my soul. But I thought how interesting it is that they only play this stuff during the holiday season. Like Silent Night would be so out of place, say, around the 4th of July, and I never understood that. You play Silent Night on December 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th. Oh, everybody just melts. Silent Night. And people get all weepy and melancholy. But if you played it on July the 4th or any time in the summer, people would be like, what is this? This song doesn't belong here. And they'd probably call the station with a formal complaint. I always thought that was curious. It goes from being a wonderful memory, inspiring tune on in December to what the heck are they playing this crazy song for? It makes me think that the sentiment that we feel oftentimes behind this song is not exactly true to itself. All right, tomorrow we're going to start with 2 Thessalonians, false miracles, farce. It's a farce too, and it's false. Don't trust miracles today, because miracles will be the number one tool of the wild beast and the false prophet. You stick to Paul's gospel. Ours is a walk of faith, not miracles. We're saving those for later.